8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Knotfest.com presents Talk to Me. With over 300 interviews under his belt and 6 years running, your host Joshua Toomey interviews metal and rock's heaviest hitters. Follow the show at Talk to Me Talk. Here's your host, Joshua Toomey.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of Talk to Me here on Knotfest.com. As always, I am Joshua Toomey, joined by the one, the only, the shaded one, Chris Aiken. Chris, how are we doing?
Awesome, man. How are we?
Not too bad, man. What's up with the cool shades this week?
Dude, these fucking ring lights are killing my eyes. And I had to make a choice between, do I wear these shades,
yeah,
or do I sit here rubbing my eyes for 60 minutes, which looks terrible on camera, so... So y'all get shades. That's just the way it's going to work.
She gets some sweet old school Bret the Hitman Hart glasses.
You know? Really should. Dude, well, this is the second pair. I've already bought yet another pair because I don't like how these look either on the camera. You know, I'm trying to get somebody actually hit me on YouTube and was like, stop wearing those shades. Wear something that's AR coded or something, which I'd never heard of that before. But I found a pair of AR coded ones and I bought them too. So.
So someone was actually useful on YouTube?
Yeah. Somebody wasn't on useful going, you fat fuck, you suck.
They didn't just give you shit for your glasses. They actually gave you an option of these are cooler glasses.
Yeah. Well, they said these will take the glare off. So I was like, okay, bring them on. I'm all for that.
Well, if you guys were paying attention earlier this week, I had CJ Pierce and Jason Marino of Drowning Pool on the show. That was a lot of fun. So if you're listening on Thursday, go back, check it out. Nice little 30-35 minute interview with the guys from Drowning Pool.
Very cool. It's cool that they're still out there. You know, it's such a tragic thing. You know, a lot of times people leave bands or die or whatever. And I think in their case, Dave Williams was so much bigger than anybody else that, you know, of a baby band. Maybe Lynn would be the only other one, but he doesn't get the love that Lynn does. I mean, you know, when people talk about Snot, they still are like, oh, Lynn Strait, and they would have been big and they would have been mad. You don't hear that with Drowning Pool. I don't know. I thought Sinner was a better album than the Snot record, personally.
Yeah, I mean, I liked both of them, but the Dave Williams thing was crazy because the 20th anniversary of his passing was recently, and my you know, Facebook and Twitter and everything feed was just blowing up with stories of Dave, and obviously I had somewhat of a relationship with Dave back in the day too, sure. So I can attest to great dude, you know, great on stage, you know, just friendly. And all of the great words for Dave Williams. So it is kind of funny in the interview. I don't know if you've listened to it or not, but I do ask him a few Dave questions, and he always turns it, man. He's like, but the one thing Dave Williams would love is our new album, and it's, you know, it'll be out, blah blah blah. Strike a nerve, you know. Right. I love CJ for that, because no matter what I asked him, he always turned it back around to, and the one thing Dave Williams would love is this new album.
He's always doing business, even from the grave.
Yeah, man. But I went to I had my first band practice in 13 years.
Nice.
And how'd that go? Man, it was actually pretty crazy how quickly we kind of fell back into the groove of everything. Like we ran through the set about three full times, you know, stopping occasionally to nail a couple of parts here and there. Like one of us may have, you know, played the wrong notes or something like that. But after about halfway through the second time we ran through it, it was like a well-oiled machine already. Like we were joking, like if this was the show, we would have been fine.
Nice.
It was a lot of fun, man. It's crazy to kind of just get back in the room with those guys. And the one thing that in the live stream, the host that we had, Al John Go, you know, he said that it was nice that we could still be friends after all these years, and we never truly had any kind of crazy falling out. You know, nobody slept with another one's wife or anything like that. Right. And getting the show together, I mean, like I said, within 30 minutes, we were all in a group chat, you know, being stupid like we were back in the day. So
sure,
it was fun, man, getting back in a room together with those guys, just playing music after so many years. Was crazy to just like I said, man, just kind of fall right back into being in a band. It's kind of cool.
Sure. Now you've got more rehearsals coming up, don't you? Aren't you doing at least one more time?
Yeah, we've got one more time this coming Sunday, and then the show is September 18th at a place called Dark Matter in Nashville. We got set times today. We go on at 6:30.
Nice. Wait a minute. You're going to travel on a football day?
So the joke was, is like, what are we going to do? Because we have our block of rehearsal space, because we rented out this place called Diamond Studios, which I'll take you back a little bit on that one. So we did a reunion show in 2009, kind of a 10-year anniversary of our first mm-hmm. album, all this other nonsense. And so we rented out this place called Diamond Studios. Nice place, but it was at a different location. So when our guitarist Trey said, hey, here's the new address, and I put it into my phone, I was like, oh, that's over by where the Titans practice. That's cool. So as I was getting closer and closer to the rehearsal space, I was about 30 minutes early, and I was looking at my wife, and I'm like, we are literally right around the corner from the Titans practice facility. Nice. So I was like, let's just drive by and see, because used to you could pull in there and there was, you know, big Titans logos and stuff like that. Now they have a gate, but I pulled up, snapped a few photos, you know, I was like, Derek, you know, how's your foot doing? You know, all that stuff. So I went and snapped a few photos at the Titans practice facility. Then I went over to the practice space, and dude, it was top notch. And the one thing that we were all joking about, you know, cause we all have decent jobs now. And, you know, back in the day when we could barely afford to buy bass strings or anything like that, you know, back when we were trying to be in a band, we didn't have the money to be in a band, but now it's like, how much is the practice space? Yeah, that's cool. Divvy it up five ways. Boom. Here it is. PayPal over, you know, I'm not having to like ask around like, hey man, can I borrow $30 for something? You know? So, I mean, that was kind of nice about everything, but yeah, man, we just set up, started going, man. Since you're not going to be there, I'll spoil something for you, for everybody right. coming, but we're opening with, kind of the opening of River Runs Red, you know.
Oh, like, cool.
I got the raises about risen again, you know, nice, yeah. right mm-hmm. up until the first kind of open spot. And then we kick into our first song, because everybody always said we sounded like Life of Agony. So there's a few spots where we worked in the Life of Agony. We worked in Domination by Pantera and we did that. And then, we worked in a Kaya song too, kind of working in our, you know, kind of the influences of the band from back right. then.
Well, you've got a Mina thing going for you, so.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that was the other part, is I am starting to transition also. So
there you go.
But yeah, man, it was just fun. Like I said, just kind of be in a room with those guys again.
Sure.
You know, we just, all of them over the years, we've always, you know, had something going on, chat, text, right. you know, things like that. And, sure. and yeah, just to get it was just more of like a family reunion than anything.
That's cool. Well, you still didn't answer my question. You're going to travel on week one of the NFL?
So the football. I was like, who's bringing the TV? Because we're all Titans fans. I mean, that's the one thing, you know, all football fans, all Titans fans. So we're going to bring a TV, and we're going to have to, like, rehearse as the game is going on. And I did make the joke. I was like, dude, if we start losing, like, our practices, it's just going to go straight to shit. So.
But a mega jam at halftime, right?
Yeah. It's we have the space from like 1 to 6, and we play at 3:30 local time there. So
okay.
So yeah, basically the entire time we practice, the game will be on.
Nice. Now, are you gonna have like friends and stuff come out to watch the practice or hang out, or not really?
No, I mean, I guess technically they're more than welcome. That was the big joke with the wife, because, you know, she rode down with me, and we ended up staying overnight. And I do have a story about my dog tried to eat my dad's dog that I'm going to end the show with. Nice. But yeah, we took my two boys, and they stayed with my dad, because my dad still lives in Tennessee.
Okay.
And they haven't seen their papa in a while. So I figured they would, they could go see him. My wife and I got an Airbnb, actually a really cool Airbnb. It was like a house, but like they had like a detached garage.
Okay.
That they had that converted into this pretty sweet Airbnb, and both my wife and I were like, man, if we were in our 20s, we totally could have lived in this thing. It was like it was cool enough to just be like this little nook in the back of the house. Nice. But I grew up in Nashville, and they always talk about Nashville just booming and the population and buildings. And, you know, they always joke about the skyline of Nashville is just filled with cranes. And I thought Nashville was a big city in the 90s when I lived there, in the 90s into the 2000s.
Sure.
And then every time I go back, I kind of stay in like one area of town. I don't really go back to a lot of the old stomping grounds like we did this time. And where we stayed was kind of in a different part of town than I'm used to. And right. So, but like all of my places that I went to in the 90s and early 2000s were all in this area. And it was unrecognizable. You would see like one or two buildings every once in a while, like, okay, I remember that one. But then everything else is just torn down and like apartments put up and just all of these mm-hmm. crazy, you know, just tall buildings. And, you know, I was doing the whole like, that used to be the record store that is now a Mexican restaurant. And that used to be a,
sure.
everything was that used to be.
Right.
And even out where my dad lives, which is a good hour, a little bit over an hour outside of Nashville, like in the country, like we were joking that, you know, when I was growing up, this was farmland as far as the eye could see. And, you know, now it's a Kohl's and a right. Five
Walmart or whatever.
Right? Walmart. You know, it's just crazy how sure. big that city has gotten. And now I'm 100% behind. We need a new Titan Stadium to just even compete, because the architecture alone in Nashville right now is so much ahead of like that old dilapidated stadium sure. that was built in the 90s that was built on the cheap even back then. So let's get a new stadium for the team.
Well, once they win a championship, then there won't be any argument, will there?
That, you know, that's probably what we might as well just go ahead and go ahead and win this year.
Yeah, especially since it doesn't look like my team's going to be standing in your way. So,
speaking of that, I will throw this plug out there. Baco and I are going to do a football picks show. We're just picking. We're not against the spread. And okay. There's in the Talk to Me Facebook group, I posted a link to the, it's like an ESPN Pick'ems league. If you want to join, you know, weekly prizes, monthly prizes, you know, whatever. But the podcast is going to be called Slobber Knockers. We recorded our first episode yesterday. We all just kind of went through picked all the games for the week and all that good stuff. So it'll be a nice little fun, quick little 30-minute football show every week.
Nice. Very cool.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, man. Nothing like trying to start a new podcast. It's going to be on the Cobras and Fire feed.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask is where can I get this?
Where can I find that? You can find it in all your favorite podcast apps.
But apparently I'm already subscribed because I'm subscribed to Cobras and Fire, so I should get it, right?
Yeah. We talk about it on there, but him and I have, for the last 5 years, we need to do a football show. So I think we just broke down and now we're doing a football show.
Well, good, because it can't be any worse than the national ones. The national ones all suck.
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
Speaking of, and I know we're just kind of all over the map, just riffing, but one of your favorites, I don't know. Did you see this, that McAfee's leaving WWE?
Yeah. I heard him today. He's putting that on hold. Like,
yeah.
And then he'll be coming back like after the season. But yeah, he kind of went big on the show today talking about what he's going to do. So yeah, Pat McAfee is going to go to College Game Day. He's going to leave SmackDown for a little while.
Yeah.
And once the college football season's over with, he'll go back. But yeah, he's about as busy as you.
Only he's making a couple more dollars a day than I am, that's for sure. Yeah. But
a few more private jets.
But. Yeah, I'd say. But I'll tell you what, that is a, you know, for a wrestling fan, that's a mm-hmm. big blow, man. He yeah. really, WWE has been just toilet wrestling for a while.
Yeah.
But he's really reinvigorated it. I think it's a bigger loss. I think WWE's got to really be scrambling right now. Because he really does make it fun when he's jumping up on the table and air guitar and just being wild. He brings a lot of energy.
He's a showman, man. I've always said, you know, he does a good job when he is a former Colt that I really appreciate. Because, I live in Indiana, and I was at a Goodwill not too long ago, and there was like a Pat McAfee. It was like one of those shirt jerseys.
Yeah,
and like I didn't immediately get repulsed by it. I was almost like, that'd be kind of no.
You're like, I might buy it. No, I won't.
No, I won't.
Still says Colts on it.
That's one thing I have found kind of fun in the YouTube chat, in the Facebook chat, is kind of us talking a little bit about football and kind of everybody getting their smack talk in.
Oh yeah.
And I will say, if you're listening to this on podcast and you want to comment, please head over to the KnotFest YouTube, comment there. Let's get that algorithm moving. And the chat already is fun, but let's get some more people over there. And the bosses are watching, so we might need to get some more people watching over there.
Yeah, so watch it twice, even if you don't watch it.
Just listen to it. Listen to it on your podcast app. But if you want to comment and you have something stupid that we say, you want to say, "You guys are so stupid, man. Why do you say it like that?" You know, like, come say it on the YouTube chat.
Yeah, please. Tell us how much we suck. See, what's that fat guy doing with those glasses? He looks like an asshole.
Yeah, you guys, if you're listening just on podcast, you have to head over just to see the glasses.
That's right. It's a perk of the show.
Well, man, I want to start out some of the music news and right. and something I sent you earlier today to see if you kind of checked it out or not. And Nickelback has announced the Get Rollin' album and shares the new single called San Quentin.
Yes, I checked it out.
So Canadian rock band Nickelback will release its long-awaited new album Get Rollin' on November 18th via BMG, led by the brand new single San Quentin, which arrives at DSPs today, digital service providers. Ooh, yep. That was quick. Nickelback's newest body of work will be its 10th studio album, first release in 5 years, anchored by a thumping beat. San Quentin is an edgy rock adventure, teasing the diverse range of sounds and songs that make up Get Rollin'.
All right.
Everything I've seen so far on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, people are going nuts about this San Quentin song. And I listened to it like 4 times in a row today.
Mm-hmm.
Just to kind of like, I was like, do I like this? Am I really liking this? Just from like note one, like the first 10 seconds of the song, I was just like, Jesus Christ, let's go.
Yeah. I've always been a Nickelback fan, and I know that makes me completely a loser to most people. Yeah. And I get that, and that's fine. I don't care. I like what I like. And I've always thought they were good anyway. I like this. It's heavier. I don't think it's that much different than anything else they do. I honestly think that most of the people that bitch about Nickelback really heard Photograph and haven't heard or heard a song since.
Well, I had an old singer that loved Nickelback. Like, okay. He was just like, and this was like, this was probably 10 years ago. Like roughly around that time, 2006, 2007, somewhere in there. But he loved them. And he was like, dude, you got to hear the first album. He's like, dude, they got Dimebag solos on it, you know, like all that stuff. And I always remember it being heavier than all of the singles and things like that.
Sure.
The one thing about this song is like the riff kicks in. I mean, it's got a super catchy poppy chorus, which, you know, Nickelback is known for. It reminds me of like Black Album era Metallica, like sleekness and cleanness with a little bit of like the very, very Hetfield-y vocal style, things like that. And then, but like what Megadeth would have done on like Risk or whatever, but better, you know, it's like somewhere in between like Black Album and Megadeth Risk is like falling into place here. That's what I kept getting from this new Nickelback.
See, I listened to it like 3 or 4 times. And I honestly was like, okay, this is like a heavier version of something like Something in Your Mouth or something like that Nickelback has done. It's not this crazy variation that's different, but I think most people, the songs they know from Nickelback are not heavy.
Yeah.
And if all you know is the radio hits of Nickelback, then you probably think, wow, this is really, really fucking strong. But it's about what they do. It's not that crazy different. I like it. I think it's cool. And Lord knows, I'm sure Chad Kroeger is not concerned one bit about everybody that bitches about him, you know, wipes his tears with bags of money, as I saw written somewhere today. It's like, yeah, he probably does.
I will say like that song, Something in Your Mouth, like lyrically stupid. Like that is terrible lyrics, terrible idea.
That's fresh from the Kiss writing camp.
And this San Quentin song, the more I listened to it, the closer it got into cheesy when I started really listening to these lyrics. Like he's on like some, you know, like a rock adventure, like basically what they're saying, you know, he's all doing a whole bunch of crazy stuff, but keep me out of San Quentin, you know? And I'm like, all right, man, you're on the verge here.
Yeah. You're not that dangerous of a band. Let's not get crazy. You are still Nickelback. You're not, you're not this crazy rebellious band here.
Yeah. So, but I mean, all in all, didn't hate it. So,
yeah. And that, I think that all by itself says something, that most people that are commenting on it are not really hating it, which that surprised me. I know I went to Blabbermouth just now and I'm looking at the comments and it's like about 60-70% positive.
Yeah. This is the most positive I've ever seen anybody talk about Nickelback. All of the metal sites are coming through, like, you know, Nickelback got the riffs and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Jesus. Listen to these stats. You ready?
Good.
Amassing hits for over two decades, Nickelback is the 11th best-selling musical act of all time.
Wow.
Counting over 50 million units sold, over 4.7 billion career streams to date.
Jeez.
The band has released 23 chart-topping singles, with 19 reaching the U.S. Billboard Hot 100. Undeniable success has resulted in over 26 awards, including Billboard Music, American Music, MTV Music Awards, Much Music, People's Choice Awards, Juno Awards, among others. Accolades also achieved 12 consecutive sold-out tours with nearly 10 million tickets sold worldwide. And they were also named the most successful rock band of the decade by Billboard in 2009.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Dude, when you think about the bands that all came out in that era...
Yeah.
And who would have thought that they would be now? I think everybody kind of assumed, and none of us like this band, but I think everybody thought that Creed was going to be that band.
Yeah, Creed.
You know, definitely. Maybe Pearl Jam. Pearl Jam, too, was sort of in that era.
And they were a little, they were the kind of like a papa to this era.
Yeah. But
yeah. Yeah. The 2000s, like it's again, like when you think about the 2000s, to me, it's just such a weird time. Like 2006 is such a weird time. Like, I don't know why.
I'm trying to think what else survived that era.
Yeah.
Papa Roach. Is that the same? That's even earlier than that, isn't it?
Yeah. Papa Roach is 99 ish, 98. Yeah. So yeah, like, yeah, Papa Roach, but they definitely, of the new metal bands that came out of that time. Yeah. They definitely were one that kind of blows me away that they kind of stuck.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially since they've never been very good. I'm not a fan of that band at all. I like them live, though. I'll give them credit. I'll give them two pieces of good credit.
Okay.
One, they are really good live, Papa Roach. And two, Jacoby is like the most awesome guy you'll ever talk to. I don't know if you've ever chatted with him or interviewed him, but he rules.
Right. No, yeah. Never interviewed Papa Roach.
He's one you ought to try and get on the show. You and him would probably talk for 3 hours. Nice. He is full of stories, and I can't wait to tell him.
Let's get into some a quick one on this one. Jason Newsted and the Chop House Band played a free concert in I'm not saying that, somewhere in New York. The main takeaway I get from this live show is Jason looks like Jason. His hair's long again. He looks cool as hell, and it's just cool to kind of see him, you know, grow the hair out and look like Jason Newsted again.
Yeah, I just wish he would sound like Jason Newsted again.
Yeah.
Instead of doing this Chop House stuff. Not that it's bad. I mean, for what it is, it's fine. But man, he's robbing us. I you know, it's his right. He certainly earned the place.
Yeah.
But goddamn, that's a guy that should be making metal. Even if he's not playing it live, he should be making metal albums. I don't know. Did you like the Newsted stuff? The actual Newsted band?
Yeah, I did. I thought that it didn't sound as good as it could have, but I did really enjoy like all of the live footage I saw from it. And then when Mike Mushock from Stain got in the band and kind of ripped solos on it and stuff like that, I thought it was pretty awesome, man.
Yeah, I thought it was great. And I thought it was a great start to what was going to be something.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, look, we all knew Jason was funding all of it. So,
yeah.
You know, that's probably the reason some of the production wasn't as good as it could have been. Not because Jason couldn't afford it, but because why did he want to pay every freaking bill? You know, somebody else could help him. That being said, I thought he was off to a great start. And, man, he just kind of quit halfway through it. He was, halfway through a tour and said, I'm done.
But dude, he quit everything like all in one day.
Yeah.
Just mm-hmm. social media, the band, like he just said, fuck it, I'm out.
Yeah, he's like, I'm gonna go up to my house there in California and just hang for a while.
Yeah. Him and all of his millions from not, you know, from making sandwiches at catering. Yeah.
That's right. Well, hey, bravo to him. Look, how much do you think he makes now from Metallica? It's still got to be more than me or you making a year, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Easily. Just from the Black album alone, probably.
Do you think he makes $2 million a year? I mean, well, he played on Justice. From Justice to what? Reload.
Yeah.
I guess. And plus all those crappy live records. The S&M 1 or whatever. And
he just bought and moved into a $6 million home in whatever city in New York.
Okay.
So he's
not broke.
He is not broke one bit. Yeah. I mean, you know, you've done the net worth of certain people, and mm-hmm. you know, you do the net worth of Lars and James, and I think they're both like right around 300 million.
Right.
I bet you Jason's probably, I'll say he's around the 50 million.
I'm gonna say he has more. So I'm gonna think he's got more because he didn't waste any of it, and unless I'm crazy, he doesn't have any divorces to give half of it away.
Jason Newsted is an American heavy metal musician who has a net worth of $60 million.
Hey, you're close. Look at that.
So
well, the guy's not looking for another.
You know,
he's not looking for his next meal. That's for sure.
He's got some, you know, writing credits on a few songs here and there. And, I'm sure he gets his mechanicals from playing on all that stuff. And
mm-hmm. you
can't get away from the Black album selling X amount of copies a week. And
right.
Yeah.
Then there's nice. All those Voivod residuals. That probably puts another, $50 a year in his pocket?
Yeah, I'm sure he gets all those that early Flotsam and Jetsam writing credit money.
Yeah, I'm sure that's huge.
Did he play on the first Flotsam and Jetsam or was he already?
I don't think so. I don't think he played on any of them. I could be wrong on that, but
yeah,
I know he wrote on it, but I don't believe he played on it.
Nice. Well, let's dive into a something we've been talking about a little bit here on the show. Skid Row's new singer, Eric Grönwall, says that he has already turned some haters into believers and followers. And I think he did that pretty quick. I thought that the haters were like, oh, here we go again with another singer. And as soon as you saw anything with him singing, you're like, okay, I'm fine.
Right. Real quick, I'm just going to backtrack. Newsted did play on Doomsday for the Deceiver.
All right, so he's at $50 million and $20 in the bank.
That's right. But he does have a flat side. We don't need the hate.
Right.
We don't need that hate on YouTube. See, you guys don't know shit. You know
nothing about nothing. Who gave you this platform?
Yeah, you guys suck. But yeah, I think as far as Grönwall goes, I think he impressed people the first day that people saw him. The first time anybody heard how close he sounded to Sebastian and saw him out there just wailing on stage, I think a lot of people were like, okay. Right. I don't know that it was necessarily haters of like Sebastian guys.
Right.
As much as it was just people that were tired of the carousel of Skid Row singers. You know, I think people had given up on Skid Row. I don't know that it was haters as much as just apathetic people. And those now they're back. They're like, okay, I'll give this a shot.
Yeah, he says at first they were like, oh, another singer, just the regular comments that you used to see, he explained. But they've actually apologized and pretty much said, I'm sorry for hating on you when I first found out. But now I have to say, I love it. I love you. And I was wrong. And he said, these are people that are sliding up in his DMs on Instagram.
Oh, boy. So in other words, the women that are in the Skid Row Facebook group are all saying how much they like him. Stop it. That's what he's judging it by? Stop.
I will say it's crazy that I guess Eric Grönwall is kind of leaking out doing some interviews now. Because I don't know this site that he did at the Rock Pit.
The Rock Pit? No. I check them out hourly.
Australia's the Rock Pit.
No, I don't know. Are they getting ready to go to Australia maybe? That's probably what it is. They're probably getting ready to go to Australia, so they're doing some Australian press.
So they're linking out Eric to do some press.
Well, Rachel and Snake are probably like, all right, we've done enough.
They have done a lot.
Well, and what is every question? It's about Eric, so they might as well get Eric out there doing a few.
We're sick of telling the same story over and over.
Yeah.
Now you tell it.
Well, you know, I mean, dude, did you ask Eric's stories to Snake?
I actually didn't. Snake just told me.
All right. Well, there you go.
But you know what I'm saying? Like we were talking about something and he just somehow went into like a 12-minute diatribe about how Eric Gronwall got in the band. And I was like, all right, I'm along for the ride, Snake.
Right. Well, and I definitely asked Rachel about Gronwall. I mean, how do you not?
Right.
You know, so yeah, I would imagine every other interview is like mine or yours where it's half the interview. So you might as well have him out there. I'd like to talk to him. I'd be interested in chatting with him. Why not? Be fun.
Yeah. I mean, definitely be fun to talk to him. Don't get me wrong. Definitely would be a nice treat to sit down with Eric Gronwall. I mean, you know, it's
you will at some point.
Yeah, probably will. something you and I talked about a long time ago. We'll kind of put a cap on this one. The Nirvana Nevermind Baby lawsuit has been dismissed for the final time.
Thank Christ. I mean, how many times is this guy gonna sue trying to get a couple bucks? You're never gonna win, dude. You did appearances dressed as the baby, you dummy. Right. You're never gonna say that you were emotionally hurt when you profited from it. You know, it's a stupid lawsuit. I'm glad that this judge threw it out, and I'm glad this judge didn't this judge say too? Yeah, we're not going to let you do this anymore. Enough with this crap.
Oh, let's see.
I'm pretty sure he did. He said that's enough. This is ridiculous.
In short, because it was undisputed that Eldon did not file his complaint within 10 years after he discovered a violation, the court concludes that his claim is untimely. The judge wrote in an 8-page ruling. The judge continued, because plaintiff had an opportunity to address the deficiencies in his complaint regarding the statute of limitations, the court is persuaded that it would be futile to afford plaintiff a fourth opportunity to file an amended complaint.
Right. Yeah. In other news, that guy's working with the baby from the euthanasia cover to get some cash.
The federal child pornography law has a 10-year statute of limitations. So
pornography law.
Yeah, he was trying to say that there was some child porn too. Here's my final thing on this. I thought about it when I read this the other day. My final thought on this: Nirvana should have, in good faith, kicked this dude some money, like, because they said basically that his parents got like $250 for him to do like a child modeling thing and then sign over the rights to the photo. However that works, I know that like. The photograph belongs to the photographer type thing. I know that people, that's like a big misconception with a lot of people when they take like live photos, like the person being photographed doesn't own the photo. The photographer owns the photo. So I'm sympathetic with the guy because I get it that your face, even, you know, your face is all over t-shirts and CDs and posters. And, you know, it's a very well-known photo. And it's very well known, and over the years, Nirvana has sold T-shirts and CDs and posters with your picture on them.
Dude, come on!
But you technically don't own the photo. But I think it became such a big thing that I wish Nirvana at some point would have just said, "In good faith, here's X amount of dollars."
So then, why pay anybody anything at the beginning of it? They offered him a fee to take a picture. He did it.
Well, that's
his family agreed to it.
Right.
That's between him. He needs to be suing his mom.
No, I get it. No,
they paid him. They paid.
I understand that he was paid, and I understand that he isn't owed anything, but it's still like something, you know.
Good faith gesture. What, yeah. Dude? You know how many people helped Nirvana over the years?
Yeah.
You know, maybe they're not all a picture of their baby dick on a fucking t-shirt, right. But let's be honest. There was probably 100 people that directly helped Nirvana that were not paid.
Yeah.
Are you going to go back and start handing them money too? Well, the guy that ran out last second because Kurt Cobain broke all his guitar strings tuning up because he was high or something.
Right.
You're going to pay that. Are you going to throw that guy $150 because you should have at the time and you didn't?
I'm just saying that they've profited over an image of him for so long.
Is the image the reason they've profited?
The image, not the music
on the record.
That's an iconic album cover.
Come on.
And it's a photo of him.
But if it was an iconic album cover on a shitty band that never sold anything, then it's still the same picture.
Right.
So
where you're coming from.
You know, but it did
become an iconic album cover for a very good album. And so that image was sold separate of the album on t-shirts and posters. Like I said, I mean, the image alone was sold many a time.
Dude, so I will guarantee you this. Me and you are way, way apart on this. I guarantee you, if you know Mark Weiss, the photographer. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mark Weiss has taken some really iconic photos of some really big bands.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, not one of those bands has ever come back to him and said, you know what? This image really did us some justice. Here's some more money.
Right.
No, they paid for what they paid for. And whatever happened behind it is what happened behind it. Do you think the guy that drew the Appetite for Destruction album was paid millions of dollars? Or do you think he was paid $500 and that's all he got?
And I get that. And even the guy that made the MTV logo, I remember he came out one day, he got paid $2,000 flat fee. You know, and you know, us growing up, we saw that everywhere, t-shirts sold, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I understand the what's right, but then at the same time, I understand that they made, I just say they could have kicked him a couple of bucks and been fine with it.
But look, Dave Grohl is struggling daily to make his bills. It's hard for him to justify spending extra money on this picture. He's barely surviving the way I see it, so.
Yeah. But you know, I like I said, I understand what they're, you know, legally bound to do, which is nothing. But in good faith, especially I wonder if he hadn't been a dick
if they might have.
Well, I think he came to him at one point with like some medical bills, like, please, can you just please help me with this? And they were like, no. Like, you know, just like basically go fuck yourself.
I would like to know the whole story.
Yeah.
Like, who did he go to? Did he go to Courtney's side? Did he go to Grohl? Because Grohl don't seem like the kind. Grohl seems like the kind that if he knew that somebody that was that well associated to Nirvana was having a problem, he'd be the one throwing the benefit concert.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
You know, I mean, that makes more to me. It sounds like this all got stopped at legal. The band didn't know anything until after it turned into. Now we're paying $5,000 to retain an attorney over this kid that we don't know anything to. And if you think about it that way, that they didn't hear about it until it was a thing,
right?
You know, until it was a legal thing, may have been handled differently if somehow he would have gotten the word to Dave Grohl or Novoselic or one of them, and not Courtney, but you know, one of the other two. Maybe it would have gone different, but. The way they did hear about it was because their lawyer said, yeah, we got this lawsuit to deal with.
I think it's Dave Grohl's quote where he's like, I'm not the one with the Nevermind tattoo.
Yeah, he's right.
All right. More stats. How many copies worldwide has Nevermind sold?
73.
30. Close? 30 million.
30 million. Pretty close.
10 million in the US alone. It's a diamond album in the US.
How many times have you bought it?
Oh, two or three maybe over the years.
I'm at three because I bought it on tape. I broke the tape. Then I bought it on CD and I still have the CD, but then I actually bought the super deluxe edition with the 100 and whatever songs or whatever it is. It's like a crazy amount of songs on it.
Right. Yeah. I definitely bought at least once on cassette, once on CD. So
yeah, dude, I think we all did. They really only had 1 million fans, but we all bought it a bunch of times.
Yeah, I definitely bought the Black Album a few times too. So
yeah, Dude, I have a whole collection of things that I've bought several times. You know, just and even if I didn't need to buy it several times, I still bought it, you know. Right. 3-4, you know, all the different, like, I'll tell you the worst one for me, Soulfly.
Okay.
Soulfly were the kings. Slipknot as well. No offense. Mm-hmm. But the two of those bands were the kings of release something that I had to have day one. And then 4 months later, they're releasing the deluxe edition with, you know, even if it was just live tracks or whatever, I had to have it because I was a completist.
I think that was a very Roadrunner thing.
Yeah, it definitely was a Roadrunner thing because
there was many times. Yeah, Fear Factory's another one.
Started that, didn't they, with their remixes and stuff?
Right.
Yeah.
But yep. Speaking of Slipknot.
Yes.
Corey Taylor explains the title of Slipknot album, The End So Far.
Okay.
And I will say the Blabbermouth is milking the SiriusXM Trunk Nation with Eddie Trunk interview that Corey did with Eddie Trunk. I think they've done no less than 5 articles from this interview.
Wow. Wonder if not fest. Well, should we ever talk to Corey Taylor?
Asked by host Eddie Trunk if he believes that each era in the band's trajectory usually corresponds to a major lineup change. Corey says, "I do, but at the same time, you can still have the end of one era and the beginning of another with the same band members. So to me, it can be a reflection of the fact that you have different members or you're just moving in a different direction. For me, it's more about just letting the fans know that we will be back and to remind them that you just never know what you're going to get with us."
So does that signal stylistic change?
I don't
know. Songs I've heard sound like Iowa era to me.
Right. Like they're going back.
Like they're going backwards to very heavy. And I hope that's what we get for the whole album, but I don't know. What do you think? What are you thinking it's going to sound like?
I'm just trying to, I guess everybody's kind of wondering if the end so far, what that means, you know, everybody's worried that like, is this the end of Slipknot and whatnot? I'm trying to see if there's anything more in this that, people have been talking about the end of Slipknot since 2003. So it really doesn't matter. If I had a nickel for every time I had to straighten fans out, I'd have a shit ton of nickels.
Oh, well, you do have a shit ton of nickels, Corey, just for the record.
So, yeah. I mean, I actually went back and I was listening to some of the random Slipknot albums over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I mean, I guess there are, you know, stylistic differences, but I mean, obviously there is a Slipknot sound. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to get too far from that sound. So, I mean, unless they're just going to go full on Stone Sour on the next album, I don't really see too much of a change,
which they could, because with Corey pretty much saying that band's like on sort of permanent hiatus,
yeah,
they could very well start integrating that. He's got to put that stuff somewhere,
right?
He's not going to stop writing it, so you know, I could see them taking some of those songs and adding the big drums to it and the big percussion, you know, the big percussion to it, and turning them into Slipknot tunes,
right? I mean, he did add more singing over the years too, which was kind of, everybody was kind of worried about with Stone Sour, that leaking into Slipknot. Mm-hmm. And now that he's doing a lot more clean singing on the albums, I think people are kind of like, over the years, but yeah, I mean, it's always been there, but I guess everybody's more worried now that they've heard Stone Sour.
Sure.
Like, oh no, what are they going to do with my Slipknot?
I don't know. Do you draw a distinct line between the two? Like, I'm a huge Slipknot fan, but not as much of a Stone Sour fan, or no?
I mean, I'm more of a Slipknot fan than Stone Sour, but I do like, I thought that those covers EPs that they did, I love a good cover, and B, I think they knocked it out of the park with the covers albums that they did. But yeah, I mean, I've always enjoyed Stone Sour. I've actually seen them live a couple of times. So,
me too.
Good times.
Yeah, I will say come whatever may.
Mm-hmm.
Is probably my favorite rock album of the last 20 years. I play that thing constantly. I'm still playing it constantly. Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah.
And so and Slipknot is Slipknot. Slipknot is whenever I want to throw something at somebody, instead I throw on Slipknot and just get my aggression out that way, which with my lifestyle, that's at least twice a week. So, right. You know, there's at least one day a week where, I don't know, Iowa or All Hope is Gone or one of them albums comes into my player.
Right.
Cause I just need that rage. So yeah, I think I'm definitely like you, I'm more of a Slipknot fan, I guess, but
right.
If I played those like in a playlist, just mixed, it wouldn't phase me at all. Like if it jumped from a Slipknot tune to a Stone Sour, you know, Looking Glass or something like that.
Yeah. Let's dive into one more quick thing before we get into some recommendations for the week. Okay. We actually should have went from Nirvana into this, but the Taylor Hawkins tribute show was not something that I cared to watch. And,
yeah.
You know, and I'm not the biggest Foo Fighters fan. They're one of those bands that I don't hate them, but I don't really go out of my way to listen to them. And I know a ton of songs and things like that. But man, talk about some timeline takeover. Like what was it, Saturday when that show was going on? It was just like everybody was just like Taylor. Like,
yeah,
it was a crazy show. Obviously, the Shane Hawkins thing with the, you know, being a dad and being played music and things like that, and just seeing his son kind of just beat the shit out of those drums,
sure,
and do a hell of a job playing the Foo Fighters song with the guys, man. That definitely. I will say that the room got a little misty on that one.
Oh, look at you.
But hey, I'll cry at anything. But that was pretty awesome to watch. Even my wife saw it on her timeline. You know, she's not a big, you know, Foo Fighters fan either, but that sure. was the parent in us all, I think, kind of took over and just like, you know, just know how big of a moment that was. And I saw clips throughout the day. I think you were going to say something about Wolfie.
Yeah.
Wolfie killing it. I was like, well, if Van Halen wants to do a tour, you know, get Wolfie out there on guitar. Don't worry about him on bass, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that dude, that was my overwhelming thought. My favorite thing. I watched a bunch of it.
Yeah.
And you know, some of it was cool, you know, like I sort of liked when they brought out Brian Johnson and they were doing Back in Black. That was kind of cool.
Yeah.
But Wolfie, Jesus. I mean, he was like note perfect of his dad's stuff.
Yeah.
And he had that same feel to it, too. It didn't feel like a stale, like a mimic.
Right.
Like you could just tell this was him and his dad sitting in whatever the music room was in their house, just doing this all the time. You know, it was really cool to see. And, you know, I emailed or texted our good friend John, who's the biggest Van Halen fan of them all.
Yes.
And I just said to him, I said, look, if they want to do this with Wolfie on the guitar, call it Van Halen. I'm in, you know, like, you know, we've been arguing this whole Pantera thing over and right. over and over again. If they did the Van Halen thing with Wolfie playing guitar after hearing how good he sounds, all in, man, I would be all in for that. That was amazing.
So Alex Van Halen, Wolfie Van Halen, David Lee Roth and Michael Anthony, and you're good with calling that Van Halen.
I'd be okay. I'd be better with Sammy Hagar, but that's me. And I know I don't want to start another. I don't want to start that war, you know, but I'd be okay with it. If Roth is good. If you had that lineup, my worry is still not the new guy. My worry is Roth, you know, my worry is Roth doing his stupid clown outfit and his
sword
swinging and shit, you know, instead of actually singing the songs. But yeah, I would be all in to go see that as Van Halen. I know it's not the same. It'd be a tribute, but so what? Just like I've been saying with the Pantera. So what? It's still going to be good.
Yeah, bring it on, man. I'm all for it.
Yeah. So yeah, that other than that though, I'm like you. I know the tunes of the Foo Fighters. Don't own a single record, never going to. Saw them once. That was more than enough for me. They were, I don't know, Grohl seems kind of pompous to me personally. But whatever. I mean, again, apparently Taylor Hawkins was a bigger deal than I knew he was, to be honest. I knew of him. I met him when he was with Alanis.
Yeah.
But yeah. Okay. It was cool. It was cool to see a lot of people up there that obviously gave a shit and getting it together, you know? So cool. You know, why not?
All right, man. Well, let's do some recommendations, and I'll give my dog story once we get out of here. But what have you been listening to this week? Anything good?
Nothing good. Something really lousy.
Okay.
And I can't believe that this, that was definitely one of my favorite bands in the 90s and 2000s, it's a long way down. This Play It Forward from Soil.
Okay.
Good Lord. I loved Soil back in the day. Loved them. Okay. Redefine and Throttle Junkies. Those are still two of my favorite records from that era. This covers record, I don't know what Ryan McCombs is trying to do,
yeah,
but it's somewhere between a James Hetfield and a James Lenfield from Beatallica. He sounds sort of in between those two guys with the whole, you know, he's doing Rob Zombie songs and he's like, more human than human. Yeah. It's like, no, dude, that's, that doesn't go there. I listened to it and I was like, wait a minute, this is wrong. I honestly didn't think it was them. It's all downtuned and it's just do a regular record. Don't do covers. Is there anybody that's ever been clamoring to hear Soil do Tom Petty covers? I don't think so.
No.
You know, it's just bad. And it's really, really not worth listening to at all. So my recommendation is avoid Soil, Play It Forward.
Have we spoke about the entire Megadeth album, or we just talked about?
I think we just talked about the singles. We haven't really got into it.
Like last Friday, I think I listened to that album just over and over and over again, and just in, there are so many moments on that thing that are so good and just take you right back to what you love about Megadeth. Mm-hmm. It's definitely an angry record. It's got some, you know, the guitar work on it's great. The bass, you know, Steve DiGiorgio on bass, you know, it's another one of those you want to hate, but you can. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, I probably listened to that thing 3-4 times in a row on Friday.
It's a great record. I'm not going to argue that point. I could do without the you know, backhanded Ellefson smashing on a couple of the tunes.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's kind of shitty, but he's being a shithead anyway in all the interviews. So whatever, you know, that's the approach he's taken, is that he's going to smash Ellefson.
Yeah.
And believe me, I wish this was a Super Collider or a Risk that was just garbage so we could really tee off on him. Can't. It's really, really good. And if you liked Megadeth in the classic, the Marty Friedman era, I'll call it. If you liked them then, you're going to like this, because it's right there. Maybe a little heavier than most of those albums, but strong.
Yeah. I like the covers on it too. The police truck, and then the Sammy Hagar cover with Sammy Hagar on it. Like, it's, I know all the Sammy haters out there that are huge Megadeth fans, like, don't know how to act, but they don't know which way is up anymore. But right. I thought it worked, man. You're thinking Sammy Hagar on a Megadeth record is not going to work, but I thought it sounded great.
You know why it sounded great? Because Sammy's not dominant on it.
Yeah, true.
You know, you almost expected it to be like Megadeth music with Sammy singing.
Right.
And it really wasn't that. It's kind of like, maybe to a lesser degree, like the Ice-T song as well. You know, with the Ice-T song, you sort of expected there to be some kind of Ice-T lyrically.
Yeah, yeah.
Like singing or whatever, or barking, whatever you call what Ice-T does. And instead it was, what was it, like a radio broadcast or something of him just doing that, which was okay. It, to me, that worked, you know? So yeah, I do like the record. Again, don't necessarily, I don't know. Would you say, I would not say it's better than Dystopia personally. I think I like Dystopia better. I think start to finish, it's stronger.
Yeah.
But I think there's like two or three songs on the new Megadeth that are better than anything on Dystopia.
I can agree with that one. I think it fits well in the catalog. I don't think it's, you know, it doesn't stray too far from classic Megadeth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're you're a old school Megadeth fan, you will definitely enjoy the new Megadeth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another quick recommendation. I'm sure you grew up listening to Metal Shop.
Yes.
And, you know, I think they played it in Nashville on Sunday nights. you know, the Charlie Kindle back in the day. You know, as much as I, you know, I look to Ricky Rackman for a lot of my stuff, you know, growing up being a huge mm-hmm. Headbangers Ball fan, Metal Shop is right there. Like every Sunday night I was recording that, the audio tapes, and just, you know, probably gave me kind of my initial love of interviews and hearing from the artists themselves and hearing, you know, new tracks and things like that. And what Charlie Kindle has done is he has taken all those old Metal Shop tapes okay. and made a Metal Shop podcast where he's kind of he's taken out all the music because he obviously can't play the music, but he's kind of you know, he'll play a little bit of the episode and then he'll talk about a little bit of the history of the show, and then he'll play some more of the episode. I mean, they're quick little 10-minute, 15-minute hitters, but mm-hmm. he's been throwing on his on a Metal Shop YouTube page that he's put together. And man, they just like, just even hearing that buzzsaw, chainsaw, whatever at the right. end of the Metal Shop, I mean, just takes you right back to being a kid, man. It's great.
We all just want to go back in time. With each day that goes by, we want to go back 50 years or 40 yeah. years or whatever.
Yeah, speaking of the band stuff, man, the five dudes that played in this version of 12 Volt Negative Earth had not played together in 24 years.
Like, wow.
Yeah, you know, that's how crazy and, you know, just stepping back in time, all this was.
Dude, but it is nuts how fast the clock goes. It's funny. I was chatting with Darren Miller, formerly of CKY yeah. yesterday, and we had not seen each other in 23 years.
Wow.
And but I did a with the radio show, I did an event with him. And so he remembered the event, and we started talking about it, and we both just started laughing at, like, Jesus, 23 years, where did that all go?
Right.
You know, because we sort of knew each other, and then it was just like, oh, now we don't, you know, nice. Because it was so long. And, you know, just it is crazy how fast the time goes, man, especially as you get older. The more old you get, the quicker it goes.
Right. Well, I will finish off with this story of my dog trying to eat my dad's okay. dog. So we've got this, I think this is a border collie mix. We got her from the pound a couple of years ago when we bought the house. Sweetest dog I've ever been around in my life. All she wants is to snuggle or pets or, you know, just always needs attention. Like, even mm-hmm. if I give my wife a hug and a kiss, like, you can see it in Abby's eyes. It's just like ruining her day that you're not giving her that love right. and attention.
Right.
But when we got the dog from the pound, it just said no chickens. Like, you weren't allowed, like, they just, I guess she'd eaten a bunch of chickens. And so that's why they had to get rid of the dog.
Okay.
Actually, the chicken thing, I'll tell, that's the second story I'll tell. We've, you know, there's a couple neighbor dogs that, you know, they kind of growl at each other, but they bark if they're both outside to use the bathroom at the same time, but never really any real aggression. More okay. of like, hold me back, dad. I'm going to get him, you know, type stuff. Right. Never really gone to attack. So we're going to Nashville. We're spending the night. We need to take the dog with us. We were initially going to take the dog with us to the Airbnb and pay the extra $30 for the pet fee or whatever.
Okay.
But I was like, you know what? I don't want to deal with any pet hair fees and all this other nonsense mm-hmm. you can kind of get. So I was like, hey, dad, you know, since my boys are going to stay with you, do you mind if the dog stays with you? He's met the dog before. Dog's fine. And he's like, well, you know, they have a dog. They have a smaller dog named Sasha.
Okay.
And a little fluffy, looks like a little fox. Well, cool little dog. So we take, you know, so we get to my dad's house. We get Abby out of the car. Sasha's outside. Immediately, Abby's like showing her teeth, wanting to eat this dog.
Nice.
And so I was like, all right, well, you know, put Abby in the spare room, you know, take her out to pee, feed her, blah, blah, blah. So what my dad was doing was he would take Sasha outside, let Abby kind of roam around the house, put Abby up, bring Sasha back in, kind of this rotation. So, you know, Abby wasn't just stuck in a room. So after band practice, I call my stepmom just to kind of check on the boys. Hey, how are the boys doing? You know, right. Did they burn the house down yet? Anything like that?
Sure.
Nothing too crazy. I'm like, all right, well, how's the dog? She's like, well, let me go check on the dog. So when she goes to check on the dog, Sasha, the small dog, runs in the room. So now they're okay. both in the same small room. My dog puts my dad's dog's head in her mouth and starts to ragdoll her. And so And I'm on the I'm on the phone. Like, right. I'm on the other end of the phone. So all I hear is, yeah, let me check. Oh my God. Screaming, dogs growling, dogs barking. My oldest son runs in the room, pulls Abby off the other dog. My dad gets woke up by all this. My dad is, you know, you don't want to wake my dad up from a nap.
Right.
So he's yelling. My son's yelling. My young son's yelling. The dogs are barking. They're screaming everywhere. And it's all coming through the phone. All nice. I know is I thought Abby ate everyone in the house. And then finally, my stepmom even puts the phone down and then she picks it up. She's like, well, I guess they're not going to be friends. And just kind of moves on. And I'm just like, oh my God, is everybody okay? Is the dog okay? Like, all I can see in my head is blood everywhere. My dad's right. dog is just ripped to shreds. My dad said that the little dog paced around the living room for like an hour. Like, I can't believe you motherfuckers brought this dog into my house. Like, what are you guys doing to me? You're trying to get me killed.
Nice. Yeah,
so my dad tried to eat my dog tried to eat my dad's dog. And,
wow.
Yeah. So Abby's probably not allowed at my dad's house anymore. So that little experiment failed. Mm-hmm.
So now every trip you take from now on will cost another $30 to $50.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, since we've had the dog, I mean, the dog went with us to New York. The dog went with us to Chicago. Like, she's a world traveler at this point, but man, wow. Yeah, she is not we cannot have another dog around her.
Nice.
So the chicken thing real quick, and this will be the last of the day. So today I was driving down the road, come up on some construction. They were right. on the main highway. They were doing some road work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm the first car in the line to go right. And there's a line of about seven cars going back, like, you know, because they got the flaggers out, they got the mm-hmm. the one guy at one end with the stop sign, the other guy at the other end with the stop sign, you know, they're doing that whole thing. Sure. Only one lane's open. Dude, I am sitting there, I have the windows down, I'm just like, I'm looking at my phone because I'm, you know, bored waiting for this just to traffic to start moving.
Right.
And all of a sudden I just hear like crunching and I look over to my left and there's a Tyson chicken plant in the town.
Okay.
I look over and all I see, it looked like an action movie, like the Avengers are coming down the street and cars are going flying off the road. And the first thing I see is this like black Jeep just get knocked into the embankment, and another white truck gets knocked into the embankment. And then this truck full of chickens tips over and starts skidding down the road and just knocking shit everywhere. And when it finally comes to a stop, the trailer's on its side, the truck is still upright, it rams into the embankment on the other side. Chickens are just everywhere. Like
live chickens or
yeah,
dead
they're
chickens?
Live. No, they're live. They're right. they were being transported to the slaughterhouse, the basically
place or whatever, right? Okay.
And wow. I'm like, what do I do? You know, because in those instances, I mean, a lot of times you'll see like the semi driver, you know, the a lot of them will die in those situations because of the jarring and the wreck and everything else, mm-hmm. man. But they finally like, I mean, there was about 10 cars over there and everybody got out and everybody checked on everybody. And from what I could tell, everybody was alive. And then they actually got the trucker out of the truck. And like he was like walking away and sat down for a second, so everybody was alive. But yeah, it was that was one of the craziest things I've ever seen on like a rural highway. Just good that Lord. That fucking chicken truck just on its side, just barreling. And I mean, what I guess happened was, you know, dudes in the truck headed into town. Speed limit's like 55,
right?
And I'm assuming that they had, you know, road construction signs, you know, sure. coming up signs, but he wasn't expecting the traffic to be stopped and right. just slammed so
jacked
on
his brakes, yeah.
slammed on his brakes and just started mowing cars. I mean, I've never seen any, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that in real life.
Nice. Well, there you go. Made it a valuable day, right?
Yeah. I'll post the chicken photo, man. The fire department posted some chicken photos. Of chickens
post that up. Nice.
Well, that'll do it for another episode of Talk To Me here on KnotFest.com. Once again, make sure you comment in the comment section on the KnotFest YouTube. That will be much appreciated. Yep. So for the Talk To Me podcast, I've been Joshua Toomey.
I'm still Chris Hagan.
And we will talk to you guys soon.
See ya.
The Talk To Me podcast presented by KnotFest.com. Follow the show at Talk To Me Talk. Be sure to subscribe, rate the podcast, and leave a review on your favorite podcast app to get the latest from the Talk To Me podcast.